Welcome to the 630 call. It's time to talk life.
It's time to talk business.
It's time to talk accountability.
Are you ready to set goals and overcome your roadblocks?
Join us as we bring professionals and entrepreneurs together to discuss all things life and business.
Listen for your dose of business therapy with us, Ella,
Lily,
and Keith.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the 630 call. I'm so excited to be here for our fourth episode. We got to know each other over the past 3 weeks, but for those of you who could not tune in, I'm Sangeeta Savaraj. I'm an attorney and business consultant interested in all things productivity and accountability. And I couldn't have better co-hosts and pod members than my friends, Lily and Ella. So introduce yourselves, ladies.
Hi, Keith. Hi, Ella. Can I just say that everyone here looks snazzy? Yeah, y'all look like you're succeeding in life right now. I mean, very gorgeous. Very gorgeous. My name is Lily Nkinshore. I'm an estate and business planning attorney here in New York. I've lived in New York for the past couple of years, which is how we all know each other. And I'm happy to be here with my co-hosts.
Thank you very much, guys, for being here with me, because this has become one of the highlights of my week. I'm Ella DeSosa Butler. I am a real estate agent with Compass. I'm with the Curb New York team. We're a team of five women that have been selling real estate for over 15 years, just helping people navigate the sales market, whether it's investing, buying, selling. So I'm very happy to be here. And I'm happy to be rounding out almost the week, right? We're almost there. And I've had a pretty good week. I've had some wins and challenges, but first I want to hear what your wins and challenges are. What's been going on with you guys?
So interesting, it's been a really, New York is warming up here. So, you know, spring has sprung and then today is a rainy day, but the last couple days have almost hit 70. And so my win was time outside where it blocked some time out for me to walk outside and, you know, get some vitamin D, okay, to actually get it during the actual sunlight hours and not in a gummy. It seems like that was the only way I was getting out because I get up at 4 and I'm missing a lot of time. So I blocked out my time enough that I could go outside to actually take a walk, grab some lunch, and just enjoy the sunlight. And everybody also had the same idea as well, too, because everybody was out. It's been a long winter, in case you haven't noticed. How about
you? Challenges for
you? Challenge was going back to work after being outside. Okay. Like, It was like I got a taste of the good life and I was like, I don't want to go back in and, you know, do it outside. So now I think I might have to just take my laptop and just get my Wi-Fi hotspot and just get outside.
You have like the whole seasonal affective, like for real, right? Seasonal affective disorder.
Interesting. And I didn't know that I had it for a long time, but except when I came back from a trip, I went to Greece. And I came back, and because of the time change, remember, a week or two after that happened, I was really lethargic. I was tired. I was not waking up at my usual, you know, crazy 4 or 5 a.m. time slot. I was really dragging. So I went to the doctor, and she had asked me, she's like, hey, you just came back from overseas. Like, you went to Greece. And I was like, yeah. She goes, oh, your circadian rhythms are off. Here's what you should do. And she told me to get a plant lamp. And I thought, this lady's crazy. Who gave her her degree? Okay. And well, somebody really succeeded in giving her her degrees because that plant lamp worked. I sat under it for like 10 to 15 minutes every morning and it actually reset. But generally over this winter, it's actually pretty common actually because I'm also dark skinned, so I don't absorb vitamin D. You see that amongst most people in the Northeast as well. I don't know.
I'm filing that away, actually, because I would never have thought as a dark-skinned person, I thought I absorbed light. Do you know what I mean? So I didn't really know that. So a lot of dark-skinned people probably do not know that. They assume they're getting enough vitamin D. Wow. But do you have enough vitamin D? Do you feel?
I don't know. I'm living off of gummies. You girls are the people take vitamins. I have vitamins for my hair. I have vitamins for D's. I have all the vitamins right now via gummies. But I don't think it really compares to being out and about. So I'm trying to take a page out of Sankeeta's book and get out and about just a little bit more. I can't promise, but just a little bit more.
So what are your wins and challenges this week?
Win. Oh, I had my first in-person team meeting this week. I'm so excited. I was excited, but I was nervous because you all know, being an entrepreneur is a relatively new adventure for me. And I've never had a team that I managed. I never formally led a team. So I'm thinking to myself, how do you put together a good agenda? How do you make icebreakers that aren't cheesy? How do you make sure you're not the only person speaking so it doesn't get boring? So I was really racking my brain over it and spent a good amount of hours trying to create a nice agenda and make it look pretty in Canva too. This wasn't some here's a sheet with all the things you're going to do today. And it went well. It was really successful. I was glad that I spent that much time on it. It was received well by the team members. It went well. And we got into some really good conversations to the point where we couldn't get to everything. But to me, I felt like that was a good sign of a good meeting. So that was my win this week. I'm really excited about that. Mm-hmm. What was my challenge this week? So on Monday, I think I texted you ladies this, I just felt very, very bored. Like everything was boring to me. I didn't want to talk to anyone. I didn't want to read anything, but I kept powering through because I knew no one else could do it. But I felt very bored and very lethargic. I literally took 2 naps on Monday. Who takes 2 naps? I took 2 naps because my brain just wanted to be quiet. And I think what's really happening is not necessarily boredom. It's burnout. I think I'm becoming very exhausted and I need to figure out a way to rest and bounce back and not just go harder. You know what I mean? That was my challenge this week.
Girl, you could have borrowed my plant lamp.
Yeah, but that gives you vitamin D. What if it doesn't? I need energy. I need a new scenery. I need to refresh my brain. I'm experiencing decision fatigue. Does the plan
work? Need a little weekend getaway or something.
I need a 3-month getaway. Yeah. Weekend getaways, you go away. By the time you travel and come back, you really only spent 36 hours away.
Right. And I always said for a vacation, you need to get there and have probably 2 weeks of come down, right? Then you need the actual vacation part. And then you need the ramp up to go back to real life part. Then when you get back, you need a vacation to slide back into.
Yeah, so 5 weeks, exactly.
Yeah, so it's a long time. Okay, so my win was actually just 15 minutes ago. I put my contact in by myself because yesterday I'm walking down the street. I pass by this optometrist. I'm I've been wanting contacts because I am so sick of looking like the old lady when I put my glasses on when we're doing our podcast. And I'm what does that say? So I have these while you guys are just reading and floating through life all happy. So I got contacts. They're multifocal and I can read everything right now. I'm feeling very peppy. Ooh. But the only thing is with multifocal contacts, which are really there to help with reading, it's sort of a compromise because you lose a little bit of distance. So my distance isn't as crisp as it is, without the contacts. So it's kind of a little in between. So I'm testing it out, but I think I'm liking this more.
Okay.
No glasses for Ella. We'll see. And then my challenge was, my challenge is I kind of am slipping on the prepare your next day, the night before thing, which we were speaking about last week. I'm back to I get into Shark Tank and, it's over. Next thing you know, I'm tired and I'm sleeping after the last Shark Tank episode goes. And it's also affecting, I had started to read with Ethan. My son's a little bit older, so he reads by himself, obviously, but he needs to have a little bit, what do they call it? Just get into reading more. He reads because he has to, not because he can enjoy it. So I've selected a few books that I like and we sort of read them together and discuss the characters at the end and what's happening. And I've slipped on that a bit, which, I want to get back into. And the book we're reading, by the way, is The Glass Castle, which if anybody has not read it yet, it's a really great book. So check it out.
No, I haven't read The Glass Castle. It's for kids.
No, that's why it's so great. Cause he's at an age now where we can read things that I also like, right?
Okay.
And so The Glass Castle is, it was a bestseller and it's about a woman who comes from I don't know if it's the Ozarks or Appalachia, but a poor rural background. She comes to New York City and she becomes this super successful writer for the New York Times, and her parents are, they're a little interesting, I'll just say that. And they end up coming to New York City and becoming squatters. And it's about her having to kind of put her new Park Avenue life together with her, you know, her old life.
Oh, the Ozarks meets Park Avenue.
Exactly. Exactly.
She's been in the Rose. She's been in the Rose. I'm sorry, what were you saying, Keith?
I love that practice you do with your son. I mean, and he's what, 14, 15 now?
He's
right?
13.
13.
Yeah. So some of the conversations we have after each chapter are about class and, you know, class in America. Just really interesting stuff. It's good.
Nice. Look at you being on, creating an evolved human being on this.
I know, right? When I actually do it.
Well, we thank you. The future people that your son will date, thank you. Okay.
Yes.
Sometimes you look at these men, you're like, so what happened during your formative years? What happened? Right.
Was it good? Did you have a good relationship with your mother? These are important questions that he can now answer with like clarity.
Yes. Yes. Good job, Ella. That's your second win of the day.
Okay, cool.
I'm glad you mentioned the books because we all read a book, which is kind of the loose format of today's session. If you all looked at the show notes, you should have seen that the title is called Embracing Your Cheetah. And that comes from a little story that was told inside Untamed, written by Glennon Doyle. This isn't a deep dive into Glennon per se or all the pieces of the book per se. It's to really extrapolate what we all took from it because it's really a theme of your voice, finding your voice, using your voice, using it in your professional life and using it in your business life. So I enjoyed the tenets that the book discussed. And I'll just do a quick overview of how I even found it before we go to commercial break. So last summer, a friend said, I want to send you a book. I think you'll really like it. And I always love people sending me books. So she sent it to me. I started reading it and I didn't put it down. I really enjoyed it. And the whole premise is the reason my friend sent it to me is because she knows that I was building my practice at the time. I was transitioning from corporate to entrepreneurship. So she felt like I needed to read something that was encouraging and uplifting and basically reminding you, you can do it. Just because you haven't done it yet or you're uncertain about certain pieces as to how to get it done, it doesn't mean it cannot be done. So I really went into the book thinking, okay, what is this lady going to tell me? And I really got some gems. And I think all of you got some gems too. So we will, once we come back from our commercial break, we'll discuss the takeaways and the moments and the aha moments and just what we felt about the concepts in general. We'll talk to you guys on the other side.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your Conscious Consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show, A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m., so tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
Did you know that nearly one in five adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Inning. Extra Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern, to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So that's 7 o'clock every Thursday evening. The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Ladies and gentlemen, just before the break, we were speaking about the book Untamed, or the principles, the general principles that we got from the book. And you may have gotten these principles from somewhere else, your mom, your grandmother, a different book that you read. So it's not about the book per se, it's just about the concepts. And I just want to start off and talk about the theme that I noticed, or the themes that resonated with me. And then Ella, I'd love to get your perspective, and then you, Keith, as well. And I've heard this before. The theme that I walked away was drop the rules. I think before, you and I, ladies, we've spoken about an executive coach and how it works. Does it work? Does it not work? All of that stuff. And I remember when I was being coached, I think in 2018, one of the things my coach told me was, you know what, Lil, you have a lot of rules. I don't know where these rules came from. I don't know how you think these rules serve you, but it might be time to drop those rules. And at first I'm like, ma'am, these rules work. You know how you're used to doing something and becomes a part of your identity and it's like wrestling it out of you, takes everything. But once she said that, I started to notice the rules that she was referencing and some others that she didn't reference. And so when I was reading this book, what I got was there's a whole bunch of rules that are placed on women more often than not. And I felt like this was a good reminder for me to drop the rules. And as I was reading the book, I had a moment where I realized, okay, I kind of have two rules that are playing in the back of my mind, which was making me nervous to transition to entrepreneurship or business ownership. The first one was I kept thinking that my chances of failing or not succeeding are greater when I'm by myself than when I'm in a corporate setting. So the corporate setting was creating a safety net feeling, a shield feeling. I had colleagues down the hall. I had a biweekly paycheck with benefits and all of this stuff. So it created a sense of security. And so I kept playing this rule that if I left this security, automatically life would become wildly insecure. And I had to drop that rule in order for me to get to where I am today. The second rule that kept playing in my head is you need to know how it's going to work out, how it's going to succeed, how exactly you're going to do everything before you do everything. Again, that mentality of, you know, we were probably all raised the same way. You go to school, you get the good grades, you get the good job, you get the good title, you climb the ladder and keep climbing, climbing, climbing. And it makes life seem linear and planned, and thinking of being a business owner rocked that for me. And so I felt like to try to create like some sense of control, I said, I need to know how everything is going to work out before I get out there. But you ladies in our accountability group, shout out to 630 Pod, reminded me that you don't need to be perfect in order to be successful. You need to be consistent. So dropping the rule of feeling that I needed to know how everything worked out, and dropping the rule that all of a sudden life becomes crazy insecure just because you don't have a corporate job, allowed me to be more of myself. So that was the theme that I noticed the most from this particular book. Ella, I'd love to know what you thought of, because I remember talking to you and you had a great theme from this book.
Yeah, so this book was... I mean, like fireworks were going off in my brain. I kept saying, you know, I kept having aha moments in this book. So for me, let me tell you this little story about this scene that the author sets in the book that really kind of sort of blew me away. So she talks about how she's at home with her sons and, you know, their friends, their guy friends, and that these group of boys are on the couch and they're playing video games and kind of zoned out the way kids are when they're playing video games. And on the floor in front of them are a group of their girlfriends, their school friends who happen to be girls, and the girls are talking while the boys are playing. So she walks in the room and she says, "Hey, do you guys want something to eat?" And the boys, you know, barely looking up from the game while they've got joystick, I'm dating myself, but while they're playing in their hands, they're like, "Yeah, we're hungry." And the girls sort of pause. Let's say there's four or five girls, and they start looking at each other, like before they answer, sort of, you know, I don't want to say nervously, but kind of like, you know, checking each other out. And then they like quietly elect one of them to basically answer the question. And one of them says, "No, we're okay. We're not that hungry." And that scene that the author, you know, so beautifully wrote was I could see that happening, because I could see myself as a girl when I was around guys, sort of always one girl was elected the spokesperson. And before we made a decision about food or whatever, like, you know, we'd have to poll each other. And, you know, that, I mean, it just rang so true to me. And I think one thing that I took, you know, I thought about was, and I think this applies to women specifically of, like, you know, my generation. I'm in my 40s. So I don't know if women in their 20s feel the same way. I mean, they grew up, you know, differently, I'm sure. Things have changed. But I think that we lose ourselves so early because women are taught how to be from such an early age. You know, so even with my son, when the little friends he had in first grade, the way they acted, their ability to sort of turn up their tomboyishness, as we call it, or whatever it is, by the time I saw them in fifth grade, those things had been dialed down so much. And so I think that women are taught, you know, how to sit, right? Our mothers, you know, again, this might be generational. This is how you sit. This is what you say, or you don't say this, or if you do this, you'll seem slutty. And, you know, I just don't think boys are, that they have the weight of all that expectation and on them. And they're a little bit more free to kind of, a word that we've been using, expand into who they are.
Right.
And so, because we might lose ourselves so early, how do we trust our voices later on, right? Because internally, we're feeling who we are. There's that truth. But then if we're trying to live up to this thing that people are telling us we should be, there's this disconnect. Right. So then where is that trust that you have in yourself? And I think this is why a lot of the women that I speak to and a lot of the things that I have read speak about how women tend to have imposter syndrome a bit more. And, you know, so that's something for us to think about, like who we are and connect with that internal voice, because it's not about the expectation. It's about who we are and standing in that truth.
Hearing you explain that concept really resonated with me, because you said a lot of time women are trained very early on how to be women, but we're not trained to be ourselves. And exactly. There's a difference, right? Just because we all happen to have the same chromosomes and biological anatomy does not mean we're the same. So someone should have been saying, "Lily, this is how you can learn to be yourself," as opposed to, "Lily, these are the steps that you need to take in order to be a good girl."
Exactly.
A good woman. So yeah, we're trained to be women, but we're not trained to figure out who we are. So that's amazing. That's sad. I think guys probably get the same thing. I think they have a longer runway, because at some point now you have the expectation of being a provider, and you got to be smart, and you got to be dominant, and you got to, like, so they probably get this too, just later on. Whereas we're like indoctrinated from the moment we like see sunlight.
Right. It's funny because this is a conversation that I've had with friends for years and years, like the whole idea of like what it means to be a woman and what it means to be a man. And a lot of times when I have this conversation, it comes down to sexuality, and bear with me, you know, follow me on this. not about sex per se, but how we express ourselves sexually. So right from the get, men are taught that their sexuality is this thing that they should be proud of and exercise, right? So, and sexuality is at the core of human existence, right? So here's this thing that's at the core of who we are as humans that they are taught to celebrate. And society celebrates their sexuality. But this very important thing in women is something that we're taught to contain, because if we don't contain it, then there is shame in that. And that's the essence of being human, right? So therefore, that is the essence of being female. And I think that that has a lot to do with the disconnect. If women felt more kind of standing and whole and confident in their sexuality, that we are sexual beings and that sexuality is equal and there's nothing to be ashamed of, I think that would go very far in other aspects of our life. So once again, it's not about sex, it's about our sexuality, our womanness, our femininity.
Right. Oh, I love that.
To this too, right? Where, you know, how different cultures express and entertain and, you know, celebrate sexuality as well too. So it runs the gamut. There's subtextual conversations here as well, you know, and is your culture also predominantly where the woman is more submissive, where it's more, the woman is meant to be the nurturer, the woman is supposed to be the woman of the house, or it's a matriarchal society, you know, so many layers about what is celebrated, what isn't, beyond the major societal portion of male, female, then there's culture, then there's your actual house and how you did it in your house or what was normal in your family. And what was expected as well too. So it's many different barriers that a person has to go through. And that's really about the awareness of themselves and their awareness of their own growth as well.
Yeah. I love that point, Keith, because this reminds me of the conversation we had with Anwar last week about energy, right? And unfortunately, you know, there is masculine and feminine energy, period. That in and of itself is not controversial, I would hope, right? The controversy comes in when we start to say, I'm going to assign you to a particular energy. So to Keith's point, if you live in an environment where, okay, feminine energy is ABC, and anyone who happens to have breasts must now go over to this category, and anyone who doesn't must now go over to this category, now you start pigeonholing people as opposed to we both have both energies. Let's figure out how we can all use it. So I love that. And I know, Keith, before we go on a break, you wanted to talk about just a high level, like what was the theme that you got? Keith, you there, Keith?
Hear us.
I'm here. I was waiting for a commercial break.
Oh. No, but we still have some time, so I just wanted you to touch on it really quickly.
And I didn't get, you know, I was slow to warm up to this book.
Okay. I know, we know.
To this book, and only it was because of recommendation of you ladies. I was like, let me check it out. They're raving about it. I want to see what the hoo-la-la about this is. But I have different points on this, and we'll get back to that after this break.
Okay. She's going to keep us waiting.
Just wait.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Mm-hmm. Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
And we're back. We're actually talking about the book Untamed by Glennon Doyle, loosely talking about the concepts that we've all gleaned from that. And my two co-hosts actually were raving about it. And so I had to read this amazing book that they were dropping gems from. And, you know, I was very slow to get into it. Okay. Like I was like, it took me a while and I was like, it was like tiny vignettes of her stories and what she took from it. And the author was taking away from it as well, too. And I remember thinking, I was like, it's just like some, you know, some chick just talking about her issues. Like, I didn't feel like it was so enlightening. I thought it was like chiclet. And I was like, okay, great. But as I listened to the takeaways that, you know, Lily and Ella were pulling out, I was like, oh, I need to think deeper. I need to actually look at this. And one of my big takeaways cumulatively over this book was really about the author finding different ways of how she found her voice. Okay, from Ella's story about separating from the pack and making your own voice and saying, hey, no, I want to eat. I don't care about you all, but I want to eat, okay? And I'm going to make you all know. And then it really brought back the point that has been consistently showing up in my life, where the quality of your life is measured by the hard conversations that you have with the people in your life. And that really happens with saying your own voice or understanding your own voice to yourself and then expressing it to someone else. So that was a big takeaway that was confirmed by reading most of this book. And also just talking to you ladies as well too. I mean, this theme has come up quite often in every area of our business, of our personal lives, whether it's relationships, friendships, colleagues, you know, even family members, and just having those hard, hard conversations. And it doesn't have to be as hard, like you're in the corner and you're prepping yourself up and have to do a couple push-ups and things like that. It's not like that. It's about actually the hard conversation is being able to express and enunciate what exactly and where exactly you're coming from and where you want to be and your experience and not being afraid of the repercussions of it.
I think that's a great point. I love that point. And you were going in and out a little bit, so I just want to make sure that everyone gets to hear these gems. But you're right, hard conversations, and I don't think it just belongs to women. Human beings, we don't want to hurt people's feelings. We don't want to be rejected. We don't want someone else to feel rejected. We don't want to put our foot in our mouths and make it worse. And so avoidance comes in. It's hard to have hard conversations. That's why they're called hard conversations. Ella, like, when was the last time you had a hard conversation and how did you have the hard conversation?
Me? Did you say it? Okay. He's talking to me. The hard conversation. So as we were saying this morning on our call, I have a lot of hard conversations with myself. Like I am constantly having a conversation with myself. Ever since I was a kid, I've very much been in my head. So, and I think I'm my own best therapist, you know what I mean? And so I actually had a conversation last week. So bear with me in my analogies or my little stories, my vignettes. So last week I went to a new listing with my partner And so after the listing, we were in the lobby and we were just having a conversation, and we hadn't seen each other for a while. And she knew I had been under the weather, you know, a couple of days before. So she said to me, "How are you feeling?" So I went into this like song and dance that I do when people ask me how I'm feeling. And I'm like, "Oh, you know, I don't really feel that great, but I'm not dying or anything. I mean, I still am coming to work. I can still do stuff. I mean, I have a bit of a cough and I'm a little achy, but I'm okay." And I just go into this Ella thing that I always do. So later on, I was thinking about that conversation, and I thought to myself, I was thinking, yeah, you know, I'm such a strong person. Like, you know, I like showing my resilience. This is what I'm telling myself, that I was showing my partner, Christine. And I might've talked about this last week, but I was showing her my strength. Right. And when I really thought about it again, I realized that I wasn't showing her my strength. I didn't want to put the weight of me on Christine. I thought me was too much for her. So I needed to be okay because I'm too much, right? And I think a lot of women can relate to that, like containing ourselves. And then another thing that, another aha moment that I got from the book, you know, that kind of connected with things that the author said in the book, was a couple years ago, I remember I was seeing this therapist, and I was describing to him relationships that I had had, right? And every relationship I've had, I meet someone, and this is with men and women, you know, it's romantic relationships and friendships. I meet the person and I'm like all into their lives. Like, what do you want to do? I think I've told you this before. What are your hopes and dreams? Oh, you want to be a writer? I think I can help you with that, whatever it is. And, so as I was recounting this to the therapist, he stopped me and he goes, "You know what you're doing, right?" And I said, "What?" He said, "You're paying for the love." And that just blew me away. And I know I tell these stories over and over time, all the time, because they really are aha moments. And my entire life, I knew that this thing I used to do with people, like, "Let me help you, let me do this," was odd, because, like, you know, you might describe things as being nice, but a lot of times, yeah, it's nice, but it's also like this pathological thing you're doing. So I knew it seemed odd. And when he said that, that was so clarifying for me. So I enter relationships feeling I have to put a down payment down, right? It's my down payment. And I wonder how many other women can, like, you know, think about that. Cause women are very much like givers. Like, that's how we're described, and that's how a lot of women describes themselves. "I'm such a giver. I'm so nurturing. I'm so this." But what part of that is, you know, your authentic self, or, you know, and what part of that is your need to, you know, make your down payment for what you think you don't deserve?
Right. Oh my God, what a good story. You're putting down payments on relationships.
Right? I want my money back. You know,
that money's gone.
I want you to do it because I don't need to put a down payment, right?
Yeah. You know, when you said that, it reminded me of a story that Oprah said, and I'm paraphrasing, so don't like write me. Like, you didn't get the story right. Relax. Oprah was talking to Stedman. Everyone knows Stedman is her lifelong partner of, I guess, 3 decades at this point. And she asked Stedman, "Don't you think that I'm nice? Like, I'm a nice person." And he said, "No, you're not a nice person." And she was taken aback, like, "I'm nice," because everyone wants to be considered nice. Like, no one will say, "I'm proud not to be a nice person." So she was taken aback. He was like, "Hear me out." He was like, "You're a helpful person. You're a warm person, but you're not nice in the way that America likes to define women as nice, as like constantly being self-sacrificing and available. You're not nice in that way, but you are warm and you are helpful." And that helped her redefine nice and all of that stuff, which was helpful to me because I've never considered myself like nice, because I see what we mean when we say nice. It's like the woman who's laying her whole body on the puddle so that everybody else can cross the street. And I'm like, "No, I'm not that chick. I don't know what she's doing. She needs to get up. I don't know what she's doing down there."
Right.
I know, a nice girl, okay? Because I don't think that we try to be because someone expects us to be. But I'll be honest, my greatest liberating moment was when I stopped being nice and just being myself. And just, I wanted to say and be like, "No, I'm okay. Like, even this book, I wanted to like it. I wanted to be nice to girls and be like,
yes. And no matter what we did, she still wouldn't get
there. I don't care about what this little chick is talking about.
Like, no, this is just some whiny chick right here. And I don't know what to take with this. It took me a while. But yeah. At least you knew where I was coming from. So there was, you know, the longer that you're nice, I feel like you're prolonging the truth. Okay. Mm. Out, okay, you're just sitting on your truth waiting for it to grow, and all it's growing is resentment. Yeah. Say it, okay? Yeah, that's the thing. And I felt like I must have lost like at least 4 wrinkles the day that I decided to stop being nice.
Yeah, you know, it's okay to define ourselves in different words. Like, you want to be intelligent, you want to be thoughtful. I consider myself thoughtful. I consider myself considerate. I'm like, okay, Ella or somebody is going through something. Let me call them. Let me ask how they're doing. Some people might call that nice. I just consider that being thoughtful. Like, I'm thinking of another person and I take the initiative to reach out to them. That to me, I appreciate that more than someone who's just nice, because I don't even know if you really mean it when you're nice, but you really mean it when you call somebody to say, you sounded off yesterday, how are you feeling?
It's so true. Like, language is so important. It's like in helping us to kind of understand, you know, what we're feeling, like really nailing it down. And nice is a word that I often have an issue with, because I'm like, well, what exactly does that mean, right? And it's funny, because I have that word, like, thing with happy. Like, people are like, but are you happy? And I'm like, well, happiness isn't this static thing you feel all the time. I don't walk around like zippity-doo-dying. Like, what does that mean? You know, like, there are moments where I feel joyful. And then there's lots of times where I'm just like, you know, I don't know much about Buddhism, but I remember someone explaining to me this Buddhist concept of walking middle path. You're neither sad nor are you happy, but you're just walking the middle path. And a lot of times I'm just walking the middle path. I'm okay. You know, so these ideas that we have to be this or that, or this or that, like, I think they a lot of times they just throw us off because they make us think something's wrong. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Ella, I mean, Keith, did you have another aha moment? I think you were telling us something about like business and personal and all of that stuff that you got from this book that you didn't like.
So I liked some parts. The parts that I did like, I'm talking about it. The other parts that I didn't like, I forgot about it. They don't stay go through life. Okay. But one of the biggest takeaways was the fact that it's hard to separate business and personal. But and I'll elaborate more on that when we come back from this commercial break as well.
Another cliffhanger.
No traffic.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
And we're back. We're talking about takeaways from the book Untamed by Glennon Doyle. And for some reason, I am back with the cliffhanger. Basically, I thought that the hardest conversations are the ones that you have with yourself. And one thing that I did see in this book that was my takeaway as well, too, is people will hold you to their limitations. So when people judge you, they are really, really judging you to what they have experienced and what their limitations are. So if they haven't experienced greatness and they haven't experienced their success in your world, one of the things that this book talked about was like they would hold you to that level. So to actually take everyone, kind of walking that middle path that Ella was talking about with a grain of salt and saying, you know, this is where your journey has. Thank you for your input. I will take that into consideration, but I'm going to be walking my own path. And that was my big takeaway with that as well, too. How about you? What was your big takeaway?
You know, what was interesting before I get into my takeaway? Before the break, you were talking about like how business and personal aren't separate. And I'd love for you to tell me, like, what does that mean? Because some people feel like I'm this way at work and I'm this way at home and they're completely two separate like beasts.
So, I mean, I've been practicing law for about 12 years and I've been a business consultant for 15. And one of the things that I've definitely found that people run their businesses the way they run their personal lives. Mm-hmm. And how many people, let's take a beat here and think about this. How many people have their personal lives in order? Right? So you kind of have to think about, okay.
It depends on what you mean by order.
So, you know, let's talk about communication. If you're great with communication in your personal life where you have open, honest, aware conversations, that are transparent in your personal life, it will lead over into how you manage a team, right? Are you having these conversations with your team in such a way, like the way that you were running your team meeting, right? This is how you are as a person. You're conscientious. You want to make sure everybody gets a say at the table. This is you as a person. Like this obviously bled over, right? Yeah. And that was one of the takeaways that I saw, especially with Glennon in this book, from what I gleaned from her story, was the fact that when she was passionate about something, when she had a cause, she went out and started a full-out activist movement because of it. Something that she saw in her personal life, she made a business out of it, okay? And went through with it. So it bleeds over because you're the common denominator, right? There is no...
I love that aha moment, like business and personal are separate. How you run your business. And then I love Ella's aha moment about paying for love or putting a down payment on her relationships. I as painful as it is to say it out loud, because it took me a while to be able to say it, but there was a little voice that was telling me that I was not good enough. Like I had to be something else. I had to be something more in both my personal and business relationships in order to be worthy to receive whatever it is that I'm trying to receive. It's similar to the paying for love, Ella. I wasn't putting a down payment on relationships. It was more like me feeling like I needed to be more and do more before I could get what more of what I wanted. And I didn't realize that because I've been very like Miss Independent. I got this under control. You know, people and your friends and family look at you a certain way. And so their positive opinion of you seeps into your brain. And so you think that's how you see yourself. But then like in the low shadow is this voice that's like, oh, you're not good enough to get that. You're not good enough to run that business. You're not good enough to maintain that relationship. You're not good enough to get the type of relationship that you want, whatever it is. And not until I really saw it playing out in somebody else's life, a la this book, did I see, oh, I think that's me too. And to have that realization honestly was painful. And it's something I needed to work out with my therapist. And it's not like the feeling has gone away. It's just gotten smaller. Like I can manage it better now. But it's good for me to know that now, because I just didn't know that that was the little self-sabotaging voice that was playing on in the background.
To follow and just to ask you this, did you ever find your personal inner voice was inherited? Like how much
I did find out that it was inherited. I found out that, and I won't throw people under the bus, but you know, people in our past who are instrumental in our upbringing say things on purpose and accidentally, not realizing they've planted not just a freaking seed, they've planted like an oak tree in your mind that stays with you forever and ever. So I now know where it came from.
Yeah, and it's not just familial. For me, anyways, I can speak for myself, some of my inherited views before I started to be really, really conscientious aware, and it still trickles in, is like someone influential in your life, like an older person, a mentor, you know, someone that you admire, a good girlfriend, you know, an ex-boyfriend, someone that you are in close contact with daily to hear their inner thoughts as well, too. You start to take on their beliefs as well, too. So it's really choosing who you surround yourself as well, too, because you're consistently inheriting if you're not being aware.
That's true. Very true. I like piggybacking on what Lily was saying, and, you know, inheriting things. Like, I find it interesting, like the story I told you about my partner and, you know, wanting to not have like my weight on her. I think it's interesting that initially when I was having the conversation with myself, I was like, oh, look at how great I am. I'm being resilient. Mm-hmm. Because what I realize is that thing that I'm always fighting against, right, was masquerading as something positive. So that often happens, I think, with us. You know what I mean? Like those bad habits or those bad decisions will try to sneak their way in as something positive. And I think that's why, like, a lot of times, like, people who enter abusive relationships or are in abusive relationships, like, will have subsequent abusive relationships, right? I think people are like, well, why they, you know, how could they choose another person that is, you know, is abusive to them? And that's because they see that thing, that new relationship, and they go, oh, like, but he's nice or she's nice or this. And they make it, it's masquerading as something else, but it's that same root, that same sickness, that same negativity, right? That they feel comfortable in. So they're walking towards it. So a lot of times the things we want to get away from, they trick us by pretending, right? And like, that's why we have to be like super astute and self-aware and have those hard conversations with ourselves. They trick us because we're walking towards something we feel comfortable with because we know it, not because it's good for us.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant, because I think the voice that says you're not good enough tricked you into believing, oh, you're just a hard worker.
Right.
You're just a striver, and you don't settle. That's why. But what it was really doing was saying, yeah, no matter what, it's like they have a secret behind me. They're like, no matter what, we're going to tell her she's not good enough. Oh, yeah, girl, you're doing good. And meanwhile, the little voice is like, we're never going to let her feel good enough.
Right. And I actually told this story to a friend, and I was like, as I was having this conversation with myself and thinking, it was almost like I saw a shadow. Like when I actually saw what it was, I was like, I see you. Like, because it was trying to like go across the room. Now everybody's like, Ella's crazy. I am a little crazy. But like I did, I felt like I saw a freaking shadow. And I'm like, I see you trying to masquerade. And I just picked it up, and it was so enlightening. Wow. You know what I mean? And another thing I wanted to say is what Sankeetha was saying, like, you know, things are inherited. So I've been watching this show, by the way, The Sinner, who on Netflix. It's very, very good. I forget who. Oh, Bill Pullman is in it. He's an amazing actor. And without giving it away, like, you know, there's this scene where like he has this near-death experience that he's actually brought on himself. And as he's having this experience, a lot of the memories that come back are from his childhood, you know, and the guy's like, I don't know, Bill Pullman is probably in his 60s. So the character obviously is around that age. And quite honestly, a lot of the characters in it, a lot of the memories they have that are affecting how they're living in, you know, present day life are of like, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old. Mm. And so to what Sankeetha is saying, it's like, yeah, how much of our subconscious, of all these things that were baked in, right, from, you know, ages 0 to 17 are sort of informing how we're acting today, right? Yeah. And it's like, it's about unpacking all that stuff. So we're not making, because we're not really, when you're living without sort of this self-analysis, I guess, and of course there can be too much, you're living with this like filter on your face.
Right.
But you don't realize that you're seeing, and a friend of mine actually used this analogy, you don't realize that everything you're seeing is through this lens. It's only when you take the filter off that you could say, oh, I'm seeing it through this.
Mm.
It's not really, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I love that.
You brought that up because there was, she's a child psychologist, actually, and she told me this a long time ago, like about 5 years ago, she said this to me. But she said, everyone is really operating from their first hurt that they ever went through, okay? So everything that ever happened from, you know, 4, 5, 6, whenever your first memorable hurt was, that's how you're still operating. Your coping mechanisms start from there. And consistently building on that, adding to that, confirming that until you get to a point, until you realize what that is and you heal that first hurt. And then you really, really grow from that point on. And it was because she goes, because she's a child psychologist, she could easily just be like, we start then, we start early, because I get to see, she gets to see them at that point. But how many people were like, what do they say, hurt people hurt other people, or another saying is like, we're all just really walking each other.
Yeah.
Right.
Thank you for that information. Thank
you. Gosh, every time I get with you guys, it's like, who needs therapy? We should get together.
No purpose. We only have like a minute left. One thing I wanted to turn it over to you, Ella, but one thing I wanted to say just very quickly is just the general theme for me was your life is bigger than what it looks like, to your filter analogy. You can have a big life, not limited by what people told you who you should be and how you should behave. So just take off the mask, take off the filter, practice taking it off, and live that big cheetah in the wild life.
Right. I had to do that. You know that. So thank you everyone for joining us. This is great. I mean, every time I come in here, I get something new. It's great. I love you guys. And hopefully you guys out there loved us too. We have a lot of great episodes planned in the future. We're still sorting them out, but you're going to learn more about us and what each of us does. And that's it. 6:30 out. Is that a good way to end it? 6:30.
We'll take that.
Okay, good. Bye. Thank you for tuning into our podcast. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode.
Stay connected to us through Instagram and Facebook at The 630 Call, all spelled out.
For more information on how you can create your own accountability group, visit our website at 630productions.com, also all spelled out.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7 o'clock every Thursday evening. The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
Hi, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you listeners, looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talk Radio NYC with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply send us a message on our website, talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.